Yeah, don't it sound so epic? Horns are screaming, I ain't the one you wanna mess with. Use a joke, I ain't the one you wanna jest with. The battle's coming, you only got a few seconds to run. Yeah.
All right, this is Matt Mannix, Bengals Chalk Talk. Today, my guest, former NFL player, current writer for 4th and 9, podcaster for Press Coverage Podcast, and forever a DB guru, Eric Crocker. Eric, how are you doing today?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Good. I mean, you're doing a lot better than Bengals fans are. Right? I mean, Bengals fans are sitting here, you know, like refreshing their browsers, refreshing their, you know, their screen, just hoping the Bengals make a move. And your 49ers, man, trading DeForest Buckner for the 13th overall selection. So not good enough that you went to the Super Bowl last year. Now you're picking 13th overall. How does that make you feel?
Yeah, you know, it was very surprising, that's for sure. I'd say it's surprising, but when you look at it from a standpoint of team building, it makes a lot of sense. I think ideally you don't want to give up a defensive lineman that's as talented as DeForest Buckner. I think the dilemma that they got into was we have Armstead, we have Buckner, who are kind of the same type of player. And Buckner, I think, maybe a little bit more high-end of a pass rusher. I believe that Armstead, overall, when you add his pass rushing ability and his run-stopping ability, I think it makes him actually a little better overall. But, you know, obviously the pass rushing part is what kind of gives Buckner the edge. And even so, I mean, you know, Armstead had 10 sacks last year. So he can get after the quarterback, too. But just the way that the 49ers defensive line is constructed, which, I mean, Bosa's the best player on that D-line. And then you still have DeFord. And now you have Armstead, who is – he was last year a three-down defensive lineman. He's going to continue that, but just have more of a role probably inside. And, yeah, man, I mean, you'd be able to get him for cheaper than Buckner, who looks like Buckner signing a $21 million a year contract with the Colts. So – I think overall, when you look at it, and, you know, next year, 49ers having to sign George Kittle and, yeah, Fred Warner and, you know, all these other guys are kind of going to, you know, demand money from the defensive side of the ball. To be able to flip Buckner for a 13th overall pick and still have somebody like Armstead who you really like to fill the role of Buckner, I think it was a good move. And Lynch and Shanahan, man, they've been really aggressive during their time here to make moves that they felt like would improve the 49ers roster. And today they did that again, which now it frees you up at pick 13 to do whatever you want at pick 31. So, it's really conflicting for a lot of 49ers fans, but I like it. I like it from when you take your emotions out of it and just what it did for the team and who they have replacing them, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, and you know, I think looking at the move, last year they were trying really hard to move Solomon Thomas. I mean, does this speak well of his future? Do you think he's safe for another year, at least until that rookie contract is up in San Francisco?
I don't think it means much for him. I doubt they're picking up his fifth-year option if they already haven't picked it up. I think it helps in the sense of you do have a solid 4-3 base end, and you can just have DeFord kind of just do what he does and specialize in more of a pass rushing situation. But, yeah, Solomon Thomas, I think, he kind of is what he is. He's a solid 4-3 end in the sense of being able to stop the run and set the edge. But outside of that, they're not getting much out of him. I don't think they're banking on him to be more than what he has been. If you get more out of him, great. That'd be amazing. But I don't think anybody's really expecting that.
Yeah, I just wonder, based on some of what he was able to do at Stanford, if he might be an interior guy in pass rush situations, just with what the situation is there now. Unless, of course, they go after it in the draft. You know, Benjamin Solak from the Draft Network has already put out an updated mock draft on Twitter, with them taking Javon Kinlaw at that 13th selection. Where do you think they might go with that pick? Or is it a trade scenario, or what do you think?
I think they pick there. I think if they are going to trade one of the picks, it's probably a 31, because I know a lot of teams look to get back into the first round and have that fifth-year option. So when you have that 31st pick, they're right there at the tail of the first round. So if there's somebody at the top of the second and they feel like they want to be able to get a player and have a fifth-year option, I think that's the trade.
Yeah.
That's where the trade will happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. You've been hearing a lot about Jalen Hurts going up boards, and you know, you kind of wonder, especially for a quarterback, to have that fifth year would be huge. So if there's somebody like a Hurts, or maybe if Jordan Love is still there or something like that, that could be prime spot for like the Chargers or the Panthers or somebody to move up from pretty early in the second and get back in there, get another year on a quarterback. I'm sorry, but you were saying, what do you think they're taking at 13?
So at 13, if it were up to me, looking at the 49ers roster right now, there are a ton of weaknesses, right? You touched on it about 49ers being in the Super Bowl just a couple months ago, and now, you know, being in position to be able to draft at 13. Where I would upgrade the team, upgrade the team, there are a ton of good offensive linemen. I feel like that could really help improve the 49ers offensively, whether it's at tackle and they haven't played guard until Staley retires, or if they're like, you know what, we need some a guy right now to fill this one position. I think the one position that really needs to be filled right now and needs an immediate impact player is receiver. So if I'm the 49ers,
absolutely.
You know, you just lost Emmanuel Sanders. So who do you have now? You have Deebo Samuel. You have the others. You know, it's like Deebo Samuel. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously George Kittle, but, you know, as far as the receivers go, you have Kendrick Bourne, who's a solid wide receiver four. You have a bunch of other guys that have really been banged up. You need that other dynamic guy. So if I'm at 13 and it's up to me, and I haven't had a lot of time to think about this, but just off the top of my head, I was like, what would I do? It would probably be Judy, CeeDee Lamb, or Ruggs. And I would be perfectly fine with whoever's at 13. That's where I would lean right now before I look too far into it. But I could see maybe an offensive lineman, one of these really good tackles, and have him playing right guard until Joe Staley retires. So I could see both scenarios playing out.
Yeah, it's funny because that was my instinct immediately. I think I tweeted like 5 minutes after it came out, you know, Jimmy G's getting his wide receiver one. Team definitely changed when they acquired Emmanuel Sanders. But now having an opportunity, 13th, a prime spot, you know, one of those guys has got to make it to 13. I think there's probably a good chance that at least two of them are there at 13. That's a great opportunity. We know what you're saying about trading too. They don't have very much draft capital. So before today, they had the 31st selection, and then they didn't pick again for 108 picks until Denver's round five pick at 139. So definitely makes sense to trade one of those picks back. Maybe you can get a couple picks in between there, a 2 and a 4 or something like that.
Yeah. Well, if you're able to get a 2 and a 3. I think that would be ideal, right? If I can move to 31 and get maybe like a mid-round two and maybe a mid-round three, I think that would probably be a little more ideal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Denver's in like that mid-round two, and I think they have a couple of picks in the third round too. So, again, somebody who could be targeting a quarterback, I think when you're looking for – especially the end of that first round, you know, the quarterback I think is the hot spot, and that's where you're going to most likely get people to possibly overpay, because obviously it's worth the risk a little bit. So it'd be interesting to see what they do with that. What you're saying about the offensive line, that makes sense to me too, because that is very much the way that team seems to be built. You know, it seems to kind of work philosophically with what they've done to build up front. So you definitely see it going either way there, but. You know what? You and I are both DBs guys, and that was a happy little coincidence that happened to happen today. But let's talk a little bit about the 2020 draft class from the cornerback perspective. You actually put out last week a top 10 list, and you know, you mentioned you're still watching some film on some guys, so I have a top 10 list myself that hasn't actually been put out there because I'm still working on it too, and hoping for some updated 40 times, but it doesn't look like we're going to get it with the travel restrictions and everything.
Right.
You know, still kind of doing some fine tuning, but a lot of similarities. But you know, there were a few key changes, so I'd like to kind of go through that, and we'll start at the top. We've got the same number one and number two. I have Okuda number one and Henderson number two, and you have Henderson number one and Okuda number two. So obviously this is a Bengals podcast, a lot of Ohio sports fans, you know, listening right now. What, you know, they're all wondering is, why do you hate Jeff Okuda?
Right, and that's what I get, right? I get a lot of, when you're crazy, like, Jeff Okuda, he's the best. And it's like, just because I have him at number two does not mean I don't like him. I have questions. Well, and I don't know, his questions really couldn't get answered, I guess, what I'm trying to say. So okay, because I'm starting off wrong. Here we go. So, Jeff Okuda, C.J. Henderson. What I looked at the most was what I factor into, first and foremost, their movement skills. I think they both have tremendous movement skills. So, from there, they both are really near the top tier of, you know, how I look at cornerbacks. Two is consistency. I actually think as far as consistency with technique and coverage ability, I feel like Okuda was cleaner in that aspect. And I think that's why so many people are high on him, because he just was the same guy every rep, no matter what, for the most part. Now, one thing that Okuda really can't do anything about is who he's played. Now, I look at cornerbacks, you know, the first thing I do when I go and I want to see, like, how somebody plays, I go to their toughest matchup, right? So with C.J. Henderson, I can go straight to the LSU game, and I know, man, LSU had several receivers who you would think are drafted, you know, go in the first round whenever they come out. Where when you go to Jeff Okuda in his film, who did he play that was like a top-tier prospect that threatens him, right? So I came away with a couple guys who I felt like maybe threatened him a little bit. Tyler Johnson from Minnesota. He's a slot guy. All right, so he's kind of out. Hamler, the receiver from Penn State, right? He's another guy from the Big Ten that will be drafted. Again, he's another slot guy. So who do you play on the outside? The one outside guy who really probably, I mean, I guess was the best guy maybe in that conference, was it Cephas guy from Nebraska or Wisconsin?
Yep.
Wisconsin. Well, he ran a 4.73, so he's not threatening him. He's not like a dangerous athlete, right? So I'm like, well, who's he going? I see the terrific numbers. I see all that. I think he's a tremendous prospect, but I need to see him up against, like, the big dog. So then he finally gets a chance, right, playing against Clemson. And you know Clemson, they got T. Higgins. And this is pretty much the highest draft prospect that Okuda went against. Well, when you see the pro day numbers, is like, okay, Higgins, you know, he ran a 4.59 hand time. So that's even slower laser time, right? So it's like, well, Higgins isn't really threatening him. Now, when they played against each other, second play of the game, Higgins caught a little bend route where he kind of went out a little bit and then came across, flattened his route off, caught the ball on Okuda, and broke his tackle. That was like the second play of the game. And then shortly after that, Clemson had a free play, and they threw the ball up. Well, Higgins had a step on Okuda. He jumped up. He made the catch. Now, he did land out of bounds, barely, right? But I'm just looking at it from an ability standpoint. This guy jumped over you to make the catch, right? And this is the first guy that I felt, you know, as a prospect, kind of challenged Okuda. And then after that, you know, we know that Higgins, his helmet came off, and I think he was, like, concussed. He didn't play again until, like, the third quarter. Clearly wasn't the same for the rest of the game. So that's one aspect of it where it's like, Who has he really played? And the first guy I did see him play had some early success until he went out with an injury. All right. And then the other part of it that makes it a little hard is their scheme, where Ohio State, they do play a lot of single high and they will play some press man, but there's a ton of press bail. There's a ton of off zone. There's a ton of press bail zone, right, where it's fine. Like, he was really good in that game, really good, right, as good as you can be. But when I watch C.J. Henderson and I see how much man press, I really get an idea, not just the man press, but who he's playing man press against. He followed, he shadowed Chase, who is probably one of the best receivers in the SEC, right? He followed him. He guarded him outside. He guarded him in the slot. And he had success all over the field while guarding him. Now, he did have a little hiccups, gave up a catch here. That was a short touchdown. There was a wheel route where he got picked, and that touchdown, but I kind of don't put that on the corner. That was a good execution by the offense. But I thought overall he had an excellent game against Chase and that level of a talent and a guy that killed everybody else in the SEC. Well, Akuda didn't really get a chance to go up against those guys. And I almost put my number three guy, which is Fulton, Christian Fulton, I almost put him over Akuda just because of how impressive he was against Alabama and guarding Jerry Jeudy and guarding Henry Ruggs. And, again, I didn't get to see Akuda go up against guys like that that really threaten him, right? Like, who's going to make you panic? Who has the speed or the elite quickness or the elite ability that's going to make – maybe I need to see how you're going to react with your technique. I didn't get to see those things from Akuda, right? So then Akuda goes and he tests, and he doesn't test poorly. He ran a 4.48 and a 4.50. That's good. I know he can run a little bit. But when it comes to – when you get to the NFL and now you play against better receivers that, you know, than what you faced in the Big Ten, and guys that are going to be quicker and more explosive and better in and out of routes, and now they're going to threaten you more, I just haven't seen that part from Akuda. And from that standpoint, I had him at number two, which isn't a big knock, right? I mean, I'm saying all these things, and even then, I still had him at my CB2, where I really like him, especially his tackling ability. But C.J. Henderson, I was able to see him. There was a play against Chase where he didn't even get set, and Chase took off, and Henderson didn't panic and went, and he broke up the ball, and he's able to do those type of things, I feel like, because he runs a 4.39. So when guys do get a step on him or the route, the rep isn't necessarily perfect, even up against elite talent, he's still able to make plays. So that was, you know, to go along with, you know, they're both 6'1", 205 pounds. They have nice frames, you know, but the elite athleticism who I saw Henderson go up against and, you know, really on a week in, week out basis in the SEC, I had to give him the nod a little bit.
Yeah, he makes some good points there, and I think those are games that stuck out for me from Henderson and from Fulton as well. As you mentioned, Alabama, we'll get to Fulton in a minute here. But, yeah, I mean, that make up speed, I mean, there was one play should have been a touchdown pass to Ja'Marr Chase in the end zone, and you know, Henderson was behind, you know, and he picked it up, and he got there, and he made a play on the ball. So you definitely see him with that makeup speed being a huge difference for him. Akuda, I'm with you. When I watch the NFL Combine, I'm probably weird because I like weird things. Number one, one of the big things that you know, one of the ways that you caught my eye on social media is going to 49ers camp and filming one-on-ones because I absolutely love watching one-on-ones. But the other thing is in the NFL Combine, it's not that I don't care about the times, but I want to watch the drill work. I want to see how these guys are moving in different directions. And, man, you're absolutely right about Akuda. He is so fluid. He is so smooth. And the only other guy that I really thought was as fluid as him at the Combine was a guy that we both have at the other end of our top 10 list, Darnay Holmes. But Akuda's doing it at 6'1", and Holmes is doing it at 5'9". So that's obviously a big difference.
Right.
You know, it's quite a bit easier for the small guys to be smooth, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But
yeah,
but now you make some great points there, and I think really, and I'd love to know your opinion on this. I feel like defensive back and wide receiver, who you also you know, evaluate quite a bit. I feel like those are two positions where it's really hard to gauge where they're going to go. You know, if you want to be predictive in the draft in terms of the order they're going to go in, because I think different coaches, different schemes are looking for different types of guys. I mean, do you feel that way? Like, are you surprised a lot by the draft order, more so at cornerback than other positions?
Yeah, well, a lot of these, like, evaluators and some of these guys that pick these players, you know, they write guys off of their board for really strange reasons, right? Like, it could be his hand size. It could be his arm length. It could be something very small that doesn't meet, like, their threshold in how high they draft guys. So a guy like, let's say, Okuda, right, who most people have as CB1, maybe this team doesn't like, you know, maybe they have a speed threshold for who they would take in the top 10. And if he doesn't meet that speed threshold because he ran a 4.48 and a 4.50, and they feel like somebody that we're taking in the top 10 should run more, you know, below 4.45, then there's a chance that they pass on him, you know. And those are things that we don't know, you know. So we can't really, you know, predict those things. We just look at him as a prospect, and it's like, man, you know, Okuda, he's a really clean prospect. I think a lot of people have him going as high as number 3 to the Detroit Lions. So, you know, those are the things right there where a guy can slip, and we don't understand why, but then they just have these weird things that they go off of. I know arm length is a big one, I think, for, like, the Seahawks, where it, like, has to be, like, 33-inch arm length, and I just kind of – I think it's ridiculous. I think if you can cover, you can cover.
It's interesting because you see some of the defensive backs, like, look really long, but then you get in there and they're not. And I know Dre Kirkpatrick was the guy for the Bengals, so when you watch him, he looks like he's a long guy, but he didn't have the arm length, so he didn't really fit into the Seattle mold. And he's never really been the, you know, what you wanted out of a round one corner in the NFL. But he's been, you know, at least a solid starter at corner the whole time he's been here. So now when we talk about funny reasons and things that some people care about, some people don't, there's one major difference, you know, between you and I on what our top 10 lists are, and that is Jeff Gladney. And you have Gladney at 8th on your list, and I have him at 3. Now, one of the things that could be looked at with Gladney is that he is 5'10". So, you know, he's definitely a guy who, you know, who's not the ideal size, not what you're looking for, especially with as big as some of these receivers are nowadays. Is height something that you take into account with that, or you know, what do you like we talked about? All these guys are really good, but. You know, is there something that you're seeing in Gladney's game that I'm missing that made you put him a little bit lower?
Well, the biggest thing for me is that you mentioned his height. And me, I typically don't care about the height if you play big. And I thought him playing big, it was a little inconsistent for me. So, you know, I touched on how clean of a prospect Okuda was, right, and how consistent his work was. Especially at the line of scrimmage. Well, I think Gladney, especially for somebody that's smaller that has to kind of depend on that and lean on that ability, I thought he was he was consistent at the line of scrimmage, but in the wrong way for me. Now, it is something that I think that is correctable, but he feathers out way too much, creates a space for guys. And if you're going to do that and you're already not the longest guy, you know, at 5'10", maybe not the longest arms and, you know, he's not a big body guy, you have to be on point at the line of scrimmage, right? Because they're going to compare him to guys like, you know, the other TCU guy, Jason Verrett, you know, back in the day. Mm-hmm. He was a 5'10 cornerback, you know, like that, but really feisty, really good at the line of scrimmage. And that's something that Gladney's going to have to hang his hat on. He can't allow himself to get big-bodied by receivers. I watched him against Baylor, and I saw one play where he made a great play on the sideline breaking the ball up against Mims. And then later in that half, he gives up a touchdown where he just falls down while guarding Mims, where he kind of like nudges on, he falls and catches and runs into the end zone. Can't have those things happen when you're smaller. So I don't mind like having a smaller guy. I had Denzel Ward, he was clearly my number one. And Jair Alexander, he was my CB2 when they were coming out. But, you know, those are both 5'10 guys. 5'10, I think Ward ended up barely being a 5'11. But I'm if you're going to be smaller, I'm fine with that. Play big. And also have some speed. And he does have speed, but it's not like ideal speed for that height, right? You've got a 4.48 at the combine. That is fast. But to have you at 5'10 and you be, you know, in that top tier, I need you to run a little bit better because you do lack height and size.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, I think you see some fight out of him both in the Baylor game and against Colin Johnson with Texas as well. But yeah, at the same time, I mean, he's at a disadvantage. So there's really there's no room for error there. You know, like we talked about with Henderson, you know, he can get beat sometimes. He's got the speed to make up for it. You know, when you're a little smaller or a little slower or anything like that, you know, you've got to be perfect in everything you're doing, because you know, you let it slip for 1 second, you get pushed off or whatever it is, like you're going to be in a bad spot there. So another guy who we both have at 10th on our list, is actually shorter than Gladney, is Darnay Holmes from UCLA. And he's the guy, like I was talking about before, you see the movement skills. I think Deion was actually pointing out too, watching the combine on TV, just how smooth, how fluid his movement skills are. What do you think of Holmes overall? I think a lot of times some of these smaller guys are labeled as slot receivers, slot corners, when they don't necessarily actually have like a full skill set for that. People just are afraid to put short guys on the edge. Do you think that's how he fits best, or you know, what's your overall take on Holmes?
Yeah, I definitely, just watching him and how he played on the outside, I think his skill set for not being, again, kind of like Gladney, where he is a good athlete, but maybe doesn't always play as big. I mean, I watched him against Washington State, and I was like, man, they just destroyed this kid. But I was able to see just kind of how he played, how he moved, his feet, his ability. Then watch him at the combine and see the fluid movements as well. I was like, man, he'd be tremendous in that nickel spot where maybe he doesn't have to guard bigger guys, more, you know, more vertical routes, so you don't have to worry about that part of it. But, you know, to kind of shadow or mirror guys that are a little quicker in and out of breaks in that slot, maybe some smaller guys, I think he'd be tremendous there. And he is a feisty guy, so I think that, you know, that'll really help him. But, yeah, I thought his value is more at the nickel position for somebody of his caliber. And I like him, but his nickel ability, as far as how I project him, that's kind of really what bumped him into my top 10, because there were other guys like Cam Dantzler that I probably would rather have at 10, but I think he can be a better nickel than Dantzler can be an outside corner, so that's why I kind of moved him up.
Okay. Yeah, and what did you think overall of his effort on tape? I honestly, watching tape, and I try and shut out all the noise. Obviously, you watch college football, you hear about guys. He was a guy I didn't really know about until I sat down and started evaluating prospects. And when I watched him without reading anything that anybody else was saying about him, one of my notes was complimenting his effort. I thought he was a pretty high-effort player. But he has been criticized by a lot of other evaluators for his effort, and you know, particularly this year that he had a drop off, and people think it's effort related. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think it was fine there. I think sometimes, especially like, you know, with draft Twitter, sometimes they take one thing one person said or one clip, and then they make it to where like that's who that player is, right? So even for like C.J. Henderson, the big knock on him is he doesn't want to tackle, right? Well, he had a poor game against Miami, and his tackling, you know, effort in that game was a little poor. But that was kind of like the only game I really saw that in. Now, he was never a tackler like Jeff Okuda, but I thought he was a really good tackler in most other games. I thought he really was willing to stick his head in there, but he can't shake that tag of not being willing to tackle because of that one game from playing in Miami. And that might be something with Darnay Holmes where maybe there's
I can see the clip right now. It's out there so much.
Right. You know, one game or one play where he maybe whiffed or maybe it was a bad effort, and then they take that and run with it and make it seem like that's who this guy is all the time. And more times than not, it's really not true.
Yeah, now we talked a little bit about the slot. One guy who has been talked about a lot as a slot corner, but not just because of his height, is Bryce Hall. You've got him listed as your fourth corner. I have him as my sixth, so pretty close in there. How does he fit in to that mold? Is the slot corner position where you see him, and you know, how would he project in the NFL?
I mean, Bryce Hall, he's one of my favorite draft prospects coming out. I love his overall game. If it weren't for, you know, question marks about his speed, not saying that people have questions about it, but us just not knowing, right? You know, he coming off of an injury. He didn't run the 40. And then, you know, now we don't, you know, with the whole coronavirus thing, I don't even know if they have a pro day. But just off of his film, he's one of the better all-around corners I've seen, probably right behind, as far as like a pure all-around guy, I think he's right behind Okuda there, where he can play off man, he can play press man, he makes plays on the ball, he tracks the ball in well, has a size. We talked about effort, right, and maybe what people say Darnay Holmes lacks. This guy doesn't lack effort at all. No matter where the ball is, he's trying to run to it. Whether it's a run play, he's trying to defeat the block and get in on action. I was so pleased with what I saw from him last year on film, and I thought he would have been the number one corner coming out that year, which he elected to stay in college another year. And then this year, you know, he didn't play the whole season. He played a decent amount of games and then went out with, I believe it was like an ankle injury, where he was down for the rest of the year. But his skill set, man, I don't know if it's just some, maybe what those coaches are doing at Virginia. You know, they had a good prospect last year with Juan Thornhill. I think he's Bryce Hall, man. He's the real deal, in my opinion. Just don't know how fast he is, how fast he'll run. But outside of that, man, like his ability and how I think it translates to the NFL, I think he's going to be all right. I think he's an outside guy. I don't know about him playing nickel. I wouldn't even, you know, his value for me is more as an outside guy.
Yeah, and like I said, I try and avoid the noise. I try and avoid other people's opinions. I listen to other people's opinions, and I love talking to guys like you and you know, reading what other people are saying. But I never want to be influenced before I look at film. You know, I always want to, like, take other people's thoughts and then go back and look at the film after I have kind of my own opinion and be open-minded about it. But Hall was a guy that people have talked about him as a slot. And when I turned on his film, I'm like, he's not playing slot. Why do people think he's a slot? And I don't know if it's his speed or if it's, you know, the physical nature with which he plays. But, you know, to me, that was the positive of it, was that looking at how he plays, they were doing like a decent amount of like cover two with corner force, which you don't see a lot of at that level anymore. So they're playing some corner force. He was coming up and you know, making plays in the run game, in particular when they were bunched, but even sometimes when they weren't. Also, he's a guy that they'll send on blitzes. So he does a lot of things that you see slot guys do. I think there's kind of two types of slot guys. You know, I think you have the slot corner who's basically a really fast Will linebacker. And then I think you have the slot corner who's more like we were talking about with Darnay, that, you know, he's a smaller, quicker guy that's going to be a good matchup for those smaller, quicker receivers. So I do see the way he plays that physical is I think he's his floor to me is a very good, you know, run defending slot. If the speed isn't there to play on the outside, you know, to me, he's definitely got that. But I'm with you. And I think on film, I think he looks plenty fast. I love the way he covers fade balls, leans on the shoulder, takes away the sideline, does some really good things technique wise with that stuff too. So, overall, I thought he was a real good player.
I think he's somebody that can slide too. I think he's somebody that he could slide, and if somebody grabs him in like the third round, they get a really good cornerback. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, and he is a guy that, you know, you kind of hear about a little bit less than you were right after the season. You've got the injury. We're going to have to see because, you know, so it doesn't look like they're having pro days. You know, like NFL teams aren't traveling. NFL teams aren't bringing in prospects. So what does that mean for medical evaluations? So without your doctors looking at a guy, you know, does a guy like that slip? You know, I think he absolutely could. So you're right with it. That could be a great pickup for somebody. And that's going to be an interesting thing as it plays out in this draft. You know, they announced that they aren't moving the draft time-wise. You know, they're not going to have it open, not going to have the public activities, but it's going to be the same date. So there's going to be I think the medical stuff it's what's a little bit lost in this, that they're not going to have that same opportunity to get these medical rechecks in some of these guys.
Right, and it really hurts like a lot of these small guys who don't get a chance to show off their athletic ability and meet with you know, a lot of these pro scouts and front office guys, because you know a lot of small school guys, you know, even if it's, you know, Division I, AA or whatever, or even some of the smaller D1s, you know, a lot of them aren't at the combine, so their first time really meeting some of these coaches or front office people and being able to show off their athleticism would be at their pro day, and they're not going to get that opportunity. So I think we'll see the least amount of smaller school guys that we've probably ever seen due to this.
Ooh, yeah, and that's a shame too. So, you know, just goes to show you though that like undrafted free agents are probably going to end up being really big in this, because those guys will probably get a shot to come in, but yeah, maybe not going where they should, maybe not getting that, you know, that respect and that ability to get drafted. Now, we talked a little bit before about having a top matchup. And we talked when we talked about Henderson against LSU in particular. And we've also talked about Henderson with having a bad moment that lingers and that people get caught up on. And I think that both are the case with A.J. Terrell, who had a bad day, you know, didn't have a Henderson day against LSU. He had a bad day against LSU. And, you know, he got a reputation, you know, that he's that guy that got burned against LSU, where, you know, the shame of it is it's a national championship. He has no chance to make it up. You know, that is what people are going to think of him until he puts on pads in the NFL. So Terrell is a guy, you have him sixth, I have him seventh. How concerned are you about that one game? You know, what are things that stand out about A.J. Terrell where you think he'll be successful in the NFL?
Yeah, when people see my list, that's the first thing they mention. You know, well, outside of C.J. Henderson being over at CUDA, the next thing that they mention is A.J. Terrell. And the first thing they go to is the LSU game. Oh, he's not good. He got cooked in the LSU game. And they're like, well, first of all, who did he get cooked by? Right, we're talking about Jamar Chase, who will probably be, you know, the first receiver off the board in next year's draft. Right, so it's a tremendous talent that we're talking about him going up against, and maybe he's not the same caliber of prospect as Chase is, but he is a good prospect, and he had a lot of success against other receivers. I thought, even when he got beat against LSU, I liked what they were doing with him. You know, he played outside. I thought he was a very fluid mover. At the combine, he shows he had plenty of speed. He was able to play inside, and I add a lot of value to that, to guys that can not only play outside but can play inside, because, you know, if they do become the prospect that you think, you know, if you draft them and you think, hey, I think he can be this level of a cornerback, you want somebody that has the ability to shadow guys and be able to play inside and play outside, you know, because there are guys like Keenan Allen who, you know, he'll line up more in the slot. And you're going to want your best corner to be able to follow him in there. So Terrell, he showed that type of ability, loved his movement skills. He just had a bad game, man, and that's the first thing everybody goes to. They don't go to the championship the previous year where he had a pick six against Alabama, you know, that really changed the way that whole game was going. They don't mention that. They just mention the LSU game. So, you know, it's tough. It's tough for him. He won't be able to shake that until he gets to the league.
Yeah, I remember I was coaching. It was like, you know, my first year coaching DBs, and I was coaching at a D3 school, and we played against a team who had this quarterback who was unbelievable. He was a 1AA transfer, and he ended up playing in Canada for he might still be playing in Canada, but guy had a huge arm and he was ridiculous. And I remember had a great game plan, worked really hard on it, you know, had my guys ready to go, and you know, they put up he put up like 350 yards and like 4 or 5 touchdowns or something like that. I remember going, you know, we played pretty tough. We lost the game, but I remember going and I was sitting in my office and I was like, you know, like I was just, you know, just mad, just angry. And one of the other coaches walks in and he's like, hey, he's doing it to everybody. Don't worry about it. He's like, don't beat yourself up over it. You know? Right. And that's kind of how I feel about Terrell in that game. Like, hey, that LSU offense was doing it to everybody. And you got the first overall pick throwing passes to, like you said, a guy's going to be a high draft pick next year. So you kind of got to look past that a little bit.
Another guy that's going to be, you know, possibly a first round pick this year with Justin Jefferson, you know. So I mean, mm-hmm. He had weapons all over, you know, and they were getting guys, man. And Chase was that guy, man. And he did it to Diggs, you know. He got Henderson once, you know. He's a tremendous prospect, man. And I think sometimes people have to understand, you know, the thing I hear even when I bring that up is, well, he's going to be facing a lot of guys like Chase, and it's like, not really, because if Chase is the prospect we think he is, he's going to be a top 15 pick. And yeah. how many receivers in the NFL right now were thought of as top 15 prospects coming out? And that's how you project him into the NFL, right? To where you think, hey, if I take him at 15, he's probably going to be, you know, you're drafting him to be the best receiver on your team. And if you're drafting somebody at 15 to be the best, that means he's a, you know, one of the top 32 receivers in the league. So, no, this isn't just any type of receiver, you know, that you can find all over the NFL. That's how I look at it, at least from, you know, from a perspective, from a prospect perspective coming out.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned Diggs. You've got Diggs 7th on your list. I've got him 8th on mine. So with Diggs coming out of Alabama, you know, smooth guy, ball skills, good reads. He's being coached really well. Those Alabama guys are always really well coached. What's your take on Diggs?
I like Diggs. You know, he reminded me a lot of like Xavier Rhodes, where it doesn't really look flashy, but he just kind of gets the job done. Now, I don't know if he has the movement skills from what I saw on film to be a guy who I feel like he can guard any type of receiver. I think, you know, if he has to guard guys that are a little smaller, quicker, shiftier, he might have trouble with those guys. But I thought for the most part, what I saw from him at Alabama is probably what his ceiling kind of is, to where he's a guy who is a solid press man guy on the outside, but that's kind of the extent of it.
Okay. Yeah, you know, he is a pretty long guy. He looks like a long guy, but as we said, that stuff can be a little bit deceiving. But
it's weird because he's the same size as like CJ Henderson and Jeff Okuda, but he looks like way bigger.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And actually, I wrote in my initial notes, Seattle kind of guy. So there you go. I'm with you on that. He's a guy that I think he's a little bit lower for me over some of these other guys because I don't know what his ceiling is, and I don't know how much more you're going to get out of him than what they got in college. Now, a difference, the other difference that you and I have is at number 9, we both got guys who didn't make the other top 10. I've got Troy Pride Jr. from Notre Dame. I did not like his film. He's a guy I had heard about. I watched him on film. I was like, all right, he's not that great. But man, at the Senior Bowl, he was good. And I went, you know, I went back and you know, I recorded all of the shows on TV from that. And, you know, the way he was mirroring, the way he was reading and undercutting routes in one-on-ones, it did not show up in games at Notre Dame at the same level. But you saw the raw clay, you know, in that practice. So that's what kind of elevated him to me is I see that potential. I think with some good coaching, he could be a very strong man defender in the NFL. You had Jalen Johnson from Utah. Didn't quite make it into my top 10. I think he was a few slots out of 14 for me. You know, real smooth runner. He has some good ball skills. You know, what did you see in Jalen Johnson that made him a top 10 guy for you?
Really, as of right now, I mean, that was my initial like top 10 that I came out with. If I had to do it over again right now, he probably wouldn't make it. I really like Parnell Motley from Oklahoma. But
all right, let's talk about him.
Yeah, so we'll just talk about him. But with Jalen Johnson, I think he's fine. I just, when I watched him, there was just nothing that jumped out to me where it's like, and that's the first thing I try to look at, like, what can this guy hang his hat on, right? Like, he can be this guy, and he's going to excel in this type of scheme, or how versatile is he? And there was just nothing that really jumped out to me about Johnson. But when we talk about Motley, man, I was watching him against Baylor. Actually, I was watching Baylor, and I'm like, man, who is this number 11? Like, and he played. He really made it look easy. He was guarding Mims, and Mims was lined up on the left side of Baylor's offense, and yeah, Motley lined up on the right side of Oklahoma's defense. Right, so they're over each other, and I mean, he was sticky, sticky, sticky every single play, everything. And I'm like, and then he gave it one catch on a slant, but it was like, it had to be low, away, his arm was in there. Like, I don't even know how Mims caught the ball. Like, he had that type of coverage. And then you see that they kind of respected him a little bit because they moved Mims to the other side. Once they moved Mims to the other side, Mims had two touchdown catches right away. Boom, boom, touchdown catches. Mm. So then they said, you know what, we're not going to let you get us. We're going to move Motley over to the other side now. So now wherever you go, Motley's going to go. And he played very well. Until the very end, he gave up a couple catches against Mims where it was like off coverage and they were playing kind of soft, almost like a prevent defense. But outside that, man, I mean, it was one of the most impressive displays of, like, from a technique standpoint and just an ability standpoint to guard a guy outside and inside that I've seen from any prospect throughout this whole process. It was a really good display of just man coverage. And, you know, he's not a guy that tested extremely well. He ran like a 4.50 and a 4.53. He wasn't invited to the pro day, I mean the combine. So I think he might be somebody that's there like later, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth round. But I really like his ability. Like, if I'm the Niners, I don't go all out and draft a cornerback high. I'd get him and see where I'm at, you know, the following year. So I like him that much to where I think he's a really good prospect, has some ups and downs, Big 12. Not known for having, you know, really good defensive back, but I think he's somebody that's definitely an intriguing prospect and definitely worthy of being in the top 10 discussion.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good deep dig there too, you know, and I think that the Big 12 defenses kind of get ragged on and made fun of a little bit, but you know, the fact is, when you're getting passed on like that, like, you're seeing it, you know, it's the reps, you know, you're getting the reps, you're getting it over and over again. So yeah, good call on that one. Now we've a little bit earlier, you mentioned Christian Fulton, and you know, in particular, like you were saying, that Alabama game was a great one for him. He's a guy, you know, strikes me as a very good press corner. You know, I think that's his best attribute. What he really does best. You know, last year, LSU also had a highly ranked corner in the draft class, and He was expected to go pretty high as Fulton is this year, and he ended up falling into the second round. And as I'm talking, the name is completely escaping me, so help me out if you can. But he ended up going to the Browns. Yeah, Greedy, thank you. So Greedy ends up falling to the Browns. Do you think that Fulton, do you think that Greedy got pigeonholed as a press guy? You think that could happen to Fulton? You think there's a chance that he falls? He was number three for you and number four for me, so we both have him, as really top, really a round one guy. Do you think there's a chance that he falls there?
He's somebody I really like him. Like I said, that once he showed me that type of ability, what he showed me, his ability against Alabama, I feel like, with good coaching, I can get that from him all the time. So if you're not threatened, which how he was playing press against Henry Ruggs, he played like, I'm not threatened by your speed. And Henry, obviously, we saw that guy run Ruggs. Yeah, he ran a 4.27. So it's a guy that's blazing. And Fulton's not the fastest guy, right? He ran a 4.47, which, again, is good. But it's not 4.27. but to play with that type of aggressiveness at the line of scrimmage and really be reading a guy down, his technique never went out the window, that said a lot to me. Now, I have questions. Like, man, can you play off? Can you play, some zone and really, be able to jump passes and do some of the things that we see guys like, Jeff Okuda do? And even C.J. Henderson, I think he's pigeonholed as a press man guy, but I thought he played tremendous from off coverage. Can we get that from Christian Fulton? That's a big question mark. They did some rock and roll stuff at LSU where they'd have Fulton. He looked like he's a single high safety, and once the guy motions back to the other side, he comes down and guard him. So I saw him do some of that, but just, I didn't get to see him run as much zone as some of the other guys. So you do worry about that. Is he a guy that, we have to have a press at the line of scrimmage? And if that's what your scheme is, which when I was with the New York Jets, we had the ability to press from pretty much any coverage. If he has that type of freedom, then, that would probably help him. But, just from an ability standpoint, man, when you do what he did against Alabama and get in Judy's face and Ruggs' face and you're not threatened at all and they don't speed up what I call your time clock, that says a lot about what type of corner he is. And, so I have him really high.
Yeah, there was one play in that game. I think it was against. I think it was Ruggs, and it was a slant route. He's playing press, and the toughest thing with defensive backs, and you play the position, so tell me if I'm wrong, but it's just giving up that leverage, giving up that inside leverage, and he lost inside leverage. He gave up the slant, but he was able to come back to it. He was able to put his own hand, on the receiver to secure the tackle, got his other hand in front, made a play on the ball, even though the guy, the receiver had a step on him and was in a great position there. That was a play that really stuck out to me because, to me, you talk about seeing guys and things that stand out, like you said about Motley, when you're not even watching the guy and you see him doing things, like that's a good indicator that he's that guy, and I think when you watch a guy get out of position and it doesn't matter, that's that guy,
It's right.
Like, okay, if we can clean that up, if you can keep that leverage, now we're really going to have something. But I think he does some really good things and really, if you're going to be good at something, press man is a great thing to be good at.
Right.
Because some guys.
You can be taught off cover. You can be taught zone eyes. As long as you work hard and you buy into it, learning how to play zone and where your eyes should be, that's something you can improve on. This is a much smaller scale, but I played in the Arena League in 2012. I had three interceptions, and it was kind of hard for me to kind of catch on to the game. Well, once I caught on to it, the following year that I ended up playing, because I went to the Jets, and then from the Jets I went back to the Arena League, I had 11 interceptions. And a lot of it was because I understood where my eyes should be and how I should be playing these different zones. Well, that stays true. That holds true even in the NFL. if you could just learn where your eyes should be and what keys you're reading, as long as you have the ability, you should be able to make plays. And I think he has the ability. It's just at LSU, they don't run a ton of zone, so that's something that he's gonna have to see.
Yeah, and having the mentality and like the mental toughness to get up in a guy's face, especially those great receivers they've got at Bama, to get up in their face, to play in press, and to really put yourself at risk, you know, because people tend to be more comfortable in loose zone because you're not getting beat in a half a second. But press, you know, one step and it's over. So, you know, great seeing that he has that mentality. And like I said, if you're going to be good at something, be good at that. And like you were saying, you can build on that and build on the air stuff. So right. There's one guy that we haven't talked about in both of our top tens. Falls right in the middle, number five for us, but we started off talking about Ohio State, so I figure we should circle around and come back to Ohio State and Damon Arnett. I don't know why this guy is not getting more talk. I was happy to see that you had him listed as high as he did, because I don't feel like a lot of people do. You know, I definitely see him as, you know, the Bengals are picking 33rd. I see him as a guy that is worthy of a pick at that level, at the top of the second round. But I feel like he's getting projected more like in the third round. Real smooth hit guy. You know, plays a little bit in the slot. You know, good ball skills. Real physical. Not necessarily a great tackler, but you know, definitely physical at the line of scrimmage. Some technique things that I don't love that he could probably clean up. But what are your thoughts on Arnett?
Yeah, I liked him almost as much as I like Jeff Okuda. So I think the biggest knock on him and what's going to make him slide a little bit is he ran a 4.57. So anytime you run a 4.57, you know, people's antennas kind of go up and it's a little alarming. But if you just look at his film, it doesn't look like his 4.57 speed or whatever he is an issue. I thought he challenged receivers at the catch points over and over and over, always making plays on the ball. You talked about him being able to slide inside. I saw him make plays on the ball from the slot, calling the slot phase. I really like him. I think this, like, cornerback class is deeper than, like, especially like last year. So he is somebody that probably in last year's draft would have went much higher. But in this year, he's going to slide a little bit. And in that 4.57, that's not going to help him. But kind of like Bryce Hall, he is somebody that you could see go in the, you know, late second or third round or whatever. And if he goes there, whoever gets him, they should be getting a really good cornerback. I like his game a lot.
Yeah, I think both those guys are definitely, you know, early second round talents. And as you mentioned, Hall there too. I feel like both those guys are really criminally underrated, and somebody's going to get a steal on those guys. Absolutely. So, all right. So appreciate you joining me. I know it's a exciting day for you with the Niners actually making some moves. Hopefully I'll log on to Twitter after we hang up this call, and maybe the Bengals have done something by now, but probably not, but yeah, that's the way it goes. So at least
AJ Green. I know we talked about that a little bit.
That's
before,
true.
And I was that's like, true. Yeah, why would they do this? I didn't quite understand it, but you know, I guess, you know, if you're going to draft a quarterback number one overall, it would be nice to have somebody like AJ Green to kind of help with that learning curve and everything, and have a bailout guy, you know, to go along with Boyd and number 11.
And you know what? You're an offensive head coach, and you take the Bengals job. And then you get AJ Green for one practice. Like, he gets hurt in your first practice. That's brutal. that's probably what Zach Taylor was looking forward to most, taking that job. And there he goes. But definitely good getting AJ back. You know, they have said that they're going to be more active in free agency, and Zach Taylor has come out and said that he's on the same page and that they're going to go get what they need. Now, I do think no action is better than, you know, resetting the tight end market for Austin Hooper. right. So, you know, I think we could be in worse position there. but yeah, I mean, we'll see. And technically, free agency hasn't even opened up yet. So, you know, hopefully they come in and get a linebacker, a guard or something like that. And a couple of the guys that are targets for the Bengals, some of them have some of the guys that have been talked about are moving on, going elsewhere. It looks like, but there are definitely some options out there too. You know, some of my top interests are still around. So we'll give it a little time to simmer. When you're a Bengals fan, you can't get too negative in March. You know what I mean?
Right.
you gotta give yourself a little distance to fall. So we'll see. So, great day, busy day for you guys, and it'll be a fun few weeks talking about what they're gonna do with that pick, what they're gonna do with both their first round picks now too. So,
right. Yep.
Once again, Eric Crocker is my guest. You can find him on Twitter. Is it what's your handle?
@Eric_Crocker.
Okay. I thought it was like Croc Time or something like that. So maybe that's just what it says on there.
I'm pretty sure if you type in Croc Time, it will pop up. But
okay.
Yeah, my actual handle is @Eric_Crocker.
Okay, all right. So
yep.
@Eric_Crocker. Great DB stuff. Also this 49ers stuff too. It'd be kind of a weird combination to be a Bengals fan and a 49ers fan. But hey, you know, teach their own. So you can check them out there. Again, thanks for joining me, and we'll have you back. We're going to keep doing as many interviews as I can, trying to put out a couple a week. I know a lot of people have more time on their hands than they're used to, so we'll try and give you some good Bengals content to take in the meantime. So we'll see you right back here next week.
Yeah, we coming forward, style.